Today's daf from Masechet Erevin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Beit. We're getting dangerously close to the edge of that cliff. And we are waiting, as we promised yesterday, for the grand opening of the next Mishnah given by our Halakha Talisker. This is not meant to be in any way a put down of our Rebbeinu, who is not showing his face, but at least we've got a good guitar in the picture. Go ahead, Sir Richard. No, it's just the Mishnah, but since we cut out your Mishnah yesterday, remember, we didn't want to lose out, you know, on all of the excitement, so. Oh, there we are on the bottom of Kuf Aleph, Amud Beis, and we're getting into the situation that we've spoken about in Masechet Shabbat, where we've got a neger that has a glustra. So remember, this is basically a door stop that sticks into a hole, which, you know, many doors are like that today, except that they keep the neger on the door. You twist it, and then it goes down into a hole on the floor to keep the door open. And over here, this was removed entirely from the door and the loop on the bottom of the door. And the thing that was special about it is that a little knob on top. And the knob was large enough to give it the din of a kli, because it could, in a pinch, you could have used it as the pestle over here for a mortar, and therefore it should be not a problem of mukta. And another issue that is that when you insert something, let's say you would insert a nail into a wall through a hole that's there already, it would still be considered to be binyan, right? So then this thing, it at least looks like binyan. I mean, you can't say it's binyan mamish because it's part of the everyday activity of opening the door and closing the door. If you pick up this thing, so there is certainly a michzik binyan at the very least. And then the question is, if it really looks like it's a kli, does anyone look at it and say, well, this guy is basically hammering the door in place with the thing with a knob on top? Very difficult to believe. He's not going to leave it there. So then it shouldn't look like a binyan. Nonetheless, Rabbi Eliezer says, no, you're not allowed to do that. Whereas Rabbi Yossi is matir. So he holds that af al pikein, it's a problem. Because he says, Bashenken, Rabbi Yossi says, what's the problem? It's a kli. There's no problem of mukta. And something like that is not used as a permanent way to fasten a door to the ground. And because of that, it should be fine. So now Rabbi Eliezer actually pointed out that this was an old story in Tveria, and they paskin like him. Maaseh b'kneset, was this beta kneset in Tveria, shahayu nohagin bo heter. And they used to use exactly this kind of device to keep the door open for the shul, keep the door wide open, let the air in. And one day, Rabbi Gamliel and the Zekenim came and they visited that shul and saw them doing it. And they said, you're not allowed to do that. Rabbi Yossi says, on the contrary, what happened was that the shul would go crazy to keep the door open. And they would bring chairs out to hold the doors open. And because of that, when Rabbi Gamliel and the Zakenim came, he said, what are you bringing chairs out till the door's open? Just stick in the little peg with the knob on top, and then there's no problem. So if anything, the story is that they were posketing like me, and that there's no issue of mirsi kabona in this case. Now, it turns out that there are many factors that we are not taking into consideration yet. And, I mean, we know that there are these other factors because we've had the question of things being mirsi kabina when we were talking about putting back a shutter on a window and stuff like that. We had all kinds of other considerations. Is it tied? Is it hanging next to the door? Is it hanging far away? Is it hanging so low that it gets to the ground? How strong is the string that it's tied with? It's just paskin a mishnah like this. So let's get into how we understand some of the questions. So first of all, item number one. If we're talking about that it's nitel be'ogudo, in other words, this is something that has a permanent heavy-duty cable attached to it or a big thick rope attached to it, and any time that you want to move this thing, you can simply pick it up. It's not going to fall off. It's not just a formal tying. It's a usable logistical time. Everybody's moded, and in that case, there's no question that this is part of the door, and nobody is going to mistake it for an act of bona. That's not the problem. What we are discussing is where it's tied, but it seems to be tied more as a formality because it's eno nitel be igudo. It's tied like with this little thing that the moment you try to move it anywhere, the thing will just break and the rope will tear. So then it clearly is not meant as a real idea. So then people will say, like, what's that? You know, basically what you're doing is this thing is not really attached to the door. And we know, as we'll see in a minute, that a neger that's bechlal not attached to the door is for sure usur to use. So the question is, what would be the din if it is tied, but it's just formally tied? And over here, the question is about the glustra, the fact that it looks like that knob. So that's a machlokas. Rabbi Yossi says, look, I agree with you that if it was just a piece, it was just a nail or a screw, yes, that is mirsi kibona. But over here, since kiven sheyesh barosho glustra, it has a din of a kli. Nobody's going to think that you took something from your kitchen drawer that you're going to be using to cook with, and you made it permanently part of a way to keep a door open. That's crazy. Whereas Reb Eliezer says, look, the bottom line is it's lying on the ground as far as I'm concerned, and therefore a person may take something if he doesn't have a screw, and also he'll take a peg of wood or something and bang it in and make that the way that he keeps his shelf on the wall. And that certainly is binyan. And therefore, this looks like binyan as well. And now we continue. What about if it doesn't have that glustra? So this, the first opening to the sugya was where it has a teres kli. What if it doesn't have a teres kli? And Richie shall continue, Bezrat Hashem. Neger hanigrar. So now we're talking about, in this case, we're talking about one of these, what would we call it? Something that sticks into the ground like that. It's a type of screw, a type of bolt, I guess, but I'm sure it has a special name. Oh, but okay. So it's tied to a door, and it's tied in such a way that as you move the door, it still drags along the ground because it's not completely in the air. So then it's considered to be osur midrabanan. And nonetheless, if you're in the Beis HaMikdash, where over there, there's a halacha that there's no shvus b'migdash. And Rashi explains here in a very special, something he doesn't say elsewhere, that when we say that ain't shvus b'migdash, we don't mean bichlal ain't shvus b'migdash. What we mean is that something that is related to the Aveda in the Beis HaMikdash ain't shvus. And therefore, what we'd be referring to over here, says Rashi, is a cabinet that contains ingredients for menachas, let's say, or a cabinet that's got some of the ketores in it, or something like that. So over there, where we need to do something that is no geya, the Aveda, there is no gezeira derabbanan in the Beis HaMikdash. But outside of the Beis HaMikdash, in the Medina, lo b'medina, over there, it is similar, since it doesn't have a neger, since it doesn't have a glustra, it's similar to binyan. How about if it's lying on the ground, mamash, it's not even attached? So then it's even usur in the Beis HaMikdash. Because in that case, it's mamish, a real malacha. It's really a machlokas. Tosfos learns that it's not that it's a malacha of binyan. It's just that there are shvusim that are usur in the Mikdash as well. And that it's a question of degree. When we say ain't shvus b'migdash, it doesn't mean no type of shvus. It means only things that are really persuasively shayach to bringing a person to doing a malacha. That is definitely a shvus even b'migdash. And therefore, when we say over here, kan v'kan asur, it's just because it's a more chomer shvus. Rabbi Yehuda Aymer, whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, if it's lying on the ground, that's still only a typical gzeira d'rabbanan. And since it's part of the way that the door works, it's not like I'm actually finding a bolt on Shabbos and say, oh, wow, what a nice way to screw my door into the ground. This is part of the way that the door was made, l'chatchila. So if that's the case, it certainly is not a real malacha of binyan. This is how Rashi learns. And therefore, it's only a shvus, and we're not gozer a shvus. Again, according to Tosis, nobody held it was anything but a shvus. The question is of how chomer a shvus it is. V'hanigrar, and one which is connected to the wall, except that it's still on the ground and it drags along, that is mutter even in the Medina. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we are even being matir. As long as it's attached to the wall, we don't have a problem. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, so what do we mean when we say neger hanigrar? And that neger hanigrar, we're saying over here, you can use b'migdash, avalo b'medina. So define what that means. It means that it's attached, but the cord is so long that rosho echad magia la'aretz. That's what we're talking about. So, I mean, the truth is, even if it weren't attached at all, I mean, when it says over here, even one end, it doesn't mean only one end, but even one end is considered to be on the ground. So even if it's attached, I view it as on the ground. And as we said earlier, that is considered to be mirzik abeina. Rabbi Yehuda says, nah, get out of here. If it's tied up and that's all that I care. It reaches the ground? Who cares if it reaches the ground? Anybody can see that what we have over here is something that is meant to be there. Who cares if you drag it along the ground? It's obvious that we put it there in order for it to be handy to stick in the ground on the door to keep it closed. So what are you talking about? Therefore, I say that's not what we mean by a neger hanigrar. That would be mutter even outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So what do we mean by neger hanigrar? What we mean is ezel neger, what we're talking about over here, that you can type of neger that's only good in the Mikdash and not in the Medina. It's totally disconnected. It's lo kashur v'lo talui. It's not even tied. It's the kind of thing that you take out of the door and you put it in the corner to make sure it doesn't get lost. And then when you need to use it again, you go to the corner and you take it. But any indication whatsoever that it's part of the standard processing of closing and opening the door, that's completely mutter, even in the Medina. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Well, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda in terms of the nigrar, so that if it is attached to the door and it's dragging, that's mutter b'medina. That much we're ready to be matir. So, but if you're talking about something that's bichlal not attached, there we paskin like the Tanakama, who holds that it's usur even in the Beis HaMikdash. Again, according to Rashi, because that's considered to be mamash malacha. Omar Rava, when do we say this? This is only where it's attached to the actual door, meaning that it's not enough for it to be hanging next to the door so that it's available for us to be able to plug in. It has to be so obviously part of the functionality of the door that it's really screwed on with a string on top to the door, and therefore it's obvious that this is nothing but a handle or a lock on the door. Really? Didn't Rabbi Tavla come to Mechuzah once, and he saw that there was one of these things, and it was Toli B'Ibra D'Dasha, and it was hanging off of the bolt on the door that goes across the middle of the door to keep the door closed, and he didn't say anything. He didn't say a word about it. He didn't say that it's in the wrong place. He didn't say it's got to be attached to the door, and that if you move it off of the door with the big, I guess it's called a bolt, you know, the big thing that you put in to keep a door locked. He didn't say anything to them. No, that was different. There, it was okay, even if it was not attached directly to the door, because that was a nitel be'igudai. And when Rava said, that means it was a very strong rope. And there, in Achinami, even if it's on the side, it's clear that it's meant to be lifted with that and always to be used. What Rava was saying is that if you've got a situation where you've got one of these just formal types of tying, then it has to be on the door itself. Rav Avya Iklan and Narada, and he sees in Narada a guy that was attaching one of these negers, and he thought that he could use like a little bit of grass, you know, some reeds. And that way it would be attached, and that would be good enough. And he said to him, hey, buddy, dein lo nitrok, don't, this is door. You cannot close with this because This is considered to be as if it's not there. Like we said before, it's only formal and you're not attaching it to the door. Boy, Rabbi Zeira, how about if it's nikmaz? Mao, what's then over there? So normally, what we've been talking until now is we were talking about where you have an eskufa under the door. The eskufa itself is raised, right? And normally when you've got something in there, what you do is you just stick it into the eskufa. It doesn't really penetrate into the ground. The eskufa is like 2 inches thick or something, right? So it's got its own hole built into the tile on the floor. Okay, what about if that got so worn out that when you stick in the neger, it has to go all the way through and hit the actual ground underneath the eskufa? So what would be the din about that? If it's nikmaz, it gets into the ground. Mahu, is that like more of a binyan problem? Because then already it's like I'm actually securing the door directly to the ground. And I mean, that's what binyan is, isn't it? Omer Rav Yosef, what's your problem? Don't you know? Lo shemiya lo hadatanya, did you never hear a braita? A braita says nishmat. If the string broke and it's no longer attached to the door, it's usr. But if it's nikmaz, that means if the hole was degraded and now it goes into the ground, that's mutter. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Omer, nikmaz, if it goes all the way into the ground, it's also usr, even though it was still attached with the string to the door. And Omer Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shmuel, and that's how we paskin. We paskin that it's usr if it goes all the way into the ground. Why is that? Omer Abaya, because look, I mean, that really looks like binyan, because that's what binyan is, screwing things into the ground. So how about if you actually made like a handle for this? So now it looks more, again, like the glustra thing. It looks like a pestle. Omalai, what are you talking? You're talking about a buchna? For all intents and purposes, you're talking about a pestle, right? But what's your problem? I mean, of course it's mutter. Omer Rav Nachumi Bar Ada, because osala bet yad mutar. That nobody is going to mistake for mirse kibayna. Now, there was this giant, really heavy beam that Rav Padat had in his house. It was so heavy, he needed to get 10 people to move it. It was usually used for, like, sitting. It was one of these very long benches, you know, and everybody would sit there for the meal. And then after the meal, he would ask everybody to help him bring it over to the door so that it would secure the door shut. And they would push it against the door at night. So Vashadu Le'adasha. And Ravi Pidas held that that was mutter. He didn't say there was a problem with it. Why is it? Because he held that since it's being used to sit on, so it's a Torah's Kli, and there's nothing that looks like, in what way does it look like binyan? I mean, you're just leaning it against it. There was another gigantic asita, and asita is a mortar, Tahavi Be Bar Shmuel, Tahavi Marzeket Adriba. This thing was gigantic. It held like 15 saw, which was really big. It's like a 50-gallon kind of container, and that's gigantic. And nonetheless, Mashmuel allowed them to move it and push it up against the door to keep the door locked. And he said, there's also a Torah's Kli Aleha. Okay, once we're talking about this, then the question is, if we're talking about doorways, and we're talking about movements of things, then that obviously brings us into the broader issue of binyan and the broader issue of Oal Arai, which is a question of putting up a shower curtain, putting up something across your front door that would just be not binyan, but would just be something that prevents people from looking into the house. So you put up a curtain or something. What's the din about that type of thing? Are you allowed to make an Oal Arai that is only for tzniut? Well, over there, it certainly doesn't look like construction. So we start off with the Maisa, in which Rami Bar Yecheskel sent a message to Rav Amram, and he said, you know, you used to say over so many beautiful verter that in the name of Rav Asi that had to do with this sugya of building a Oal Arai. Can you remind me of some of them? So he sent back, yeah. I'll tell you what that was. That was Ochi Omer Vasi, Ani Kipe de Arba. So what are the Kipe de Arba? Kipe de Arba is something that is very common. What it is a type of construction. We have, let's say, an aluminum bar that's flexible. You put the aluminum bar into a little hole on either side. So now you've got yourself an aluminum arc, right? That goes over. Now, so what they would do in these tourist boats, and you can see this still today, in order for the boat to remain wide open if it isn't raining, so they have just these like arcs that are going over the boat. And if it starts to rain, so then they just pull a tarp over it. And now that tarp becomes an actual oval over the boat. So it's a kipe de arba. Kipe always means that, like a round thing on top, like a kipa. And an arba is a boat. So there, he said, what Ravasi said was, if each one of those aluminum bars are a tefach wide, for sure you don't have a problem. Why? Because a tefach is the actual shear of an ohel, right? As we know from ohelos. So if a tefach is the normal ohel, anything that you're adding when you're putting on a tarp over the two bars or the 20 bars that you've got going down along the entire length of the boat is just adding to an ohel that's already there. And being mosif in a way that is aroi, the whole thing is impermanent, so being mosif on ohel aroi is completely mutter. And there's another thing. Even if each one of them is only a centimeter wide, but suppose you have so many of them that they're within three tvachim of each other, which means that for all intents and purposes, they're lavud, and you've got one solid kipi that's going across the whole thing. So what's the problem? So you can add the tarp over it to close up the hole, and therefore it would be mutter. And there was actually the same thing. Rav Huna had himself some rams, that it was very hot, so that he needed to keep them in the shade during the day. They would get overheated. But at night, he needed to open up things so they would get a lot of air and it would cool down. So that what they would do was during the chol, he didn't have any problem. Because what he would do was normally he would just sort of spread things over them in the daytime to protect them. And then he wouldn't have a problem at night to take them off. But when it came to Shabbos, he was concerned. And so he asked, okay, what am I supposed to do? So he goes to Rav. So Rav said to him, look, it's very simple. What you need to do is you need to have a tarp that is rolled up. And if you have a tarp that's rolled up, then all you need to do is unroll the tarp. If you unroll the tarp, then what you're doing is adding to your oihal, as long as the tarp was originally left open for one tefach. So then even though now you spread it 50 feet, it would still be okay. So zil kroch budya and shir ba tefach, make sure that it's one tefach that's still open. And when you leave that tefach open the next day, then you could simply spread it out. L'mochar pashta, and then again, you'll be mosif alo ala roi v'shapir dami. This may have implications for a very common situation where you've got, let's say, you've got a picnic table in your backyard with an umbrella that opens and closes over the picnic table, right? So normally you won't open an umbrella because of the problem of asiyas oil. And obviously, if it's a type of umbrella that you need to pick up, so then there's no eitzah, because if you're picking it up, the picking it up itself is making the oil mitchila. But how about if the umbrella is stuck in position inside the table or inside a support? And the umbrella, even if it's not open, it's still open more than a tefach. So then, l'chora, you would be allowed to simply spread it out further because you already have a tefach that's covered. And making it larger than a tefach should be all right. But is this the same eitzah that Rav Huna is giving him? Omer Rav, Mishum Rabbi Chiya, Vilon, to put up an actual curtain in front of your door, and that's for purposes of privacy, you're allowed to put that up from the beginning. You could put it up, you could take it down. You don't have to just spread it more, because that is not considered to be an ohel at all, because it goes up and down. It's not really something that covers a tefach. It doesn't have a top. The same thing would be true of the kilat chatanim. Now, remember the weird kilat chatanim story. We had this a number of times. The issue of kilat chatanim, which sounds very, very strange. So we call this a bridal bed. Now, the way the Gemara describes the bridal bed, the bride and the groom together can't be more than about 5 inches wide, which is a little difficult to believe. I mean, I know that there's a lot of people lose weight for the wedding, but this is ridiculous. So Rashi, if you recall, had his own shot about that. But the portion of meaning is that you've got this canopy bed. And this canopy bed, instead of having like a frame for a canopy, it's just got a piece, a pole that is going from the head of the bed to the foot of the bed. And then you put the canopy over that, and then it hangs down. So now the question is, are you making an ohel? So if it's only a pole, and you don't have a tefach on the pole, so then it should be okay, according to the standards that we just said, because as long as it doesn't have a tefach, it's basically just a privacy vilon. However, we say it's not so poshut. Even though it seems like kilat chatanim mutala por kavali na tota b'shabbat, you could just put it up or take it down because it does not have a tefach, says Rav Sheshit Brei Dravidi, hold on a second. That's only if it doesn't have a pole that's a tefach wide. If it has a pole that's a tefach wide, then we're in trouble, because then you're actually making an ohel, right? And there's another problem. The other problem is that even if ein begaga tefach, but as it starts to slope, the slope is so wide. Now, it's not a very wide slope, but the slope is so wide that within lovehood, which is three tefachim, then it reaches a tefach. That's already no good, because then it's as if it has a tefach, because within an area of lovehood, it has a tefach in width, and that's an ohel. And even if you manage to do that, there's one other problem. It can't have a tefach at the point that it reaches the bed from the end till the middle of the bed, because if it has b'shipua tefach, it's a tefach beneath the area that is sloping downwards. If you paskin, as I do, shipue oalim ka oalim damo, and this was something that we had before in oalos, that the area that slopes down is all considered to be part of the same oal on the top, so then you would still be usher, because the whole thing is considered to be one big, more than a tefach oal. Now, as Rashi points out, that means that they can only be 5 inches wide at the bottom, and how exactly is this a bridal canopy? So the way that Rashi explained it, if you recall, and he does so again over here, is that there are a lot of these things on top. Maybe there's like 10 of them. So there's these poles that go across the top, and this is sort of a really cute up and down type of ohel. And then obviously underneath the whole thing over there, there's no problem of room. There's plenty of room. You've got 10 of these kilat chatanims on top of you. So that's how he understands. You can see the little diagram that Rashi made to show you what it's like. The armor of Sheshes, Breder of Edi, Sayana Shori. Sayana is a Borsellino hat. We had this sugi before in Shabbos. So are you allowed to wear a wide brim Borsellino hat on Shabbos? So Rav Sheshes says it's mutter. Ask the Gemara, but it says it's usser. Ah, lokasha. Ha de is beit tefach. It depends how wide the brim is. Now, of course, when the style is that the wider the brim, the better the Borsellino, then you should get into a problem. So one is talking about when you have a tefach, and one is talking about where there's no tefach. If there's not a tefach, so then you're not making an ohel. Wait a second. Are you trying to tell me if you put your talus on, and your talus sticks out like over your head up front, and it sticks out for a tefach, you're saying you're not allowed to put your talus over your head, and you're going to call that as an ohel? I never heard of such a thing. Nobody heard of such a thing. Come on. Oh, okay, you're right. Let's drop our concern about your Borsellino actually being an ohel. That's not the problem. Actually, elalo kasha, hodemi hadek, hodelomi hadek. The difference is nothing to do with how wide the brim is. It has to do with how tight the hat fits on your head, or whether it's tied beneath your chin, because the problem is that we're worried, if you're wearing something like that, and boy, these Borsellinos are expensive, so if a wind comes along and blows your hat into the Rosh HaRabim, what's the chance that a yeshiva bocher is going to leave his Borsellino there? He's going to carry it in the Rosh HaRabim, probably. And therefore, it's usher. So according to this, there would be no problem in wearing a hat. However, the Tosfos brings that actually there is a problem in wearing a hat, and that this does not mean, like Rashi, that we're concerned that the wind is going to blow it off. It means that if it is mahadik, it's referring to how tight the brim is, not how tight the hat is. And if it's a kind of really tough, straight brim that doesn't bend easily, and it really sticks out like an ohel, so then it should be usur. And according to that, we come out in the sugya that it's usur. It was an interesting shaila that was sent to the Tzitz Eliezer about why in the world people are not makbid on this. It's how could it be that we have a das ha-tesfus Rabbeinu Chananel, and people still go around wearing these borsalino hats, and everybody's got a cause. So that this was a big cause. We should come out against wearing these wide brim hats. So he wrote back a very interesting tshuva where he pointed out that according to most of the shitas, there's not even a place to be machmir, because the reason that people wear these hats has nothing to do with shading. It has to do with style. And therefore, the gezeira about an ohel has nothing to do with the din of clothing being stylish. It has to do with the question of whether you're putting up something to shade yourself from the sun. And because of that, nobody's machmir, because that's not the real tafkid of wearing a borsalino, which would mean that if you're wearing one of those big sun hats and it would be actually, stiff, that maybe there would be a problem on Shabbos of wearing a hat like that. We are ready for our Halakha Talisker.
I see this is going to be a busy day.
Yeah, I was figuring you were like eating your porridge there in the morning to be ready. I gotta get some fresh air here. Okay, what happens if you need to replace a door? How about that? So, marzirin sir ha-tachton b'migdash, avalo b'medina. So here too, we're talking, as Rashi says, as I mentioned to you before, we're talking about a cabinet that's got things in it for the korbanos, for menachos, you need it for the keteras. And because of that, we don't have a gezeira. So imagine we've got a situation where a door falls out, the pin falls out. You've all had this situation. We have to carefully hold the door and fit it back in again, right? So sometimes the bottom tier can fall out, and sometimes the upper tier can fall out. If the bottom falls out, basically the door is still supported, and it still twists and everything. And the only thing is you got to lift it a little bit to get it in properly so that it now closes straight. But if the top falls out, so then really the door is not actually pivoting kimat at all because it's hanging out at this terrible angle because the top fell out. So then there's a difference between putting it back in on top or putting it back in on the bottom. So if a bottom tier falls out, you're allowed to fix that in the Mikdash, but even that you can't do in the Medina because of the Gezeira that we'll see later on, we'll be talking about. When it comes to the Elyon, the upper one, you can't even do that in the Beis HaMikdash. Because again, according to Rashi, this would be a halacha of paskening that yesh binyan bekelim, and that it would be therefore shayach to be diaraisa, which Tosfos points out is problematic because yesh binyan bekelim was true only according to Beit Shammai. So how did we suddenly get over here into machlokas Beit Shammai Beis Hillel in the way that we're being masbir the Mishnah? So he learns again, as I mentioned to you earlier, that there are gezeiros that we make in the shvusim that we make that are really serious shvusim that we'll make in the Beis HaMikdash as well. Rabbi Yehuda again says that he's mumreiko, and he says, no, you can put back even a top tzir in the Beis HaMikdash, but not in the Medina, and you can, what you are allowed to do, is a tachton, the one on the bottom, that you're allowed to do, even in the Medina. Okay, so now, the question is there a difference between this type of situation, where you're plugging something in on a door that's like attached to a cabinet, or the situation where it's attached directly to the ground? Is it the same thing? Can Gavi look to the left a little bit and see if we could see the Yama Kinneret? Or... you know, it's not coming. I think so. Yeah. I think I see a reflection of the Yama Kinneret there. Okay. All right. So, Tana Rabbanan. Tzir Delet Shida Teva Umigdal. So how about where you've got now the classic case of Shida Teva Umigdal, could be referring to an actual, you know, stagecoach or a closet. So in the Beis HaMikdash, you're allowed to put it back in, even if it's out of its socket. In the Medina, if it slipped out, but it's still near the socket, you can give it a little push so that it falls back into the hole. Yes. But this is on the bottom one. Vaha Elyon, but if you're talking about an upper one, you cannot put it in, not in the Beis HaMikdash, not in the Medina, again, because in that case, it would be real binyan. So why can't you do the bottom one? Why aren't you allowed to do that in the Medina? Gzeira Shema Yitka. This is the fundamental problem that we have. And when we finally get to the point of why are we so concerned about doing something which is obviously not binyan? It's still, the thing is still functional. And we're just putting something that is made to come in and out. I mean, so is there something so bad about putting it back in? The same kind of issue that we would have if the temple of your eyeglasses fell out and so on. What is the problem in all of these cases? The case that's the problem is where it's possible that you may need to use a screwdriver or a hammer, and we are concerned. Shema Yitka, that is the name of a very important gezerah that we have, and we are imtaka, if you would have actually made it by fixing it with a hammer or with a screwdriver, then you would mamash b'chayev. Why? Because that repair is a makah b'patish, and therefore it would bring you to an issur d'oraisa. That we are therefore makbin on over here, and according to Tosfos, sometimes even in the Beis HaMikdash itself. Now, the question is, how about if the door that we're talking about is a part of something that's attached to the ground? It's not just a portable box of some kind or closet. It's a door of a bor or a dut or a yetzia. So this is something that is mamish on the ground. And now if I put it back in, it would be mamish binyan, right? Yes, that's true. There you can't even put it in, not because of Gzeira Shema Yitka, but because over there it's actual building if you did. The Imirzir, in this case, since it's a part of the ground, and you'll be putting it back into a binyan on the ground, that is not Kalin. And there you would be Chayev Midi Raisa. Sir Richard. Marzirin retiya b'migdash. So imagine a situation like this. A Kohen before Shabbos got a wound on his hand. So he's got it all bandaged up with antibiotics and everything. And now it's his turn to work in the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos. There's no way that he can work with a chatzitza on his hand because we understand v'lakach ha-Kohen means v'lakach ha-Kohen. He has to be in touch with what it is that he is actually being ovid with. So he has to take it off. Can he put it back on when he finishes doing the Aveda? Yes. Marzirin retiya b'migdash, you're allowed to put it back on. Now, it turns out that in Maseret Beitza, we discover that this is a rare situation, which is called something that we're matir because of sofo, namely, if we wouldn't be matir him to put it back on, then he wouldn't take it off. And if he wouldn't take it off, he wouldn't be able to do the Aveda in the Beis HaMikdash. That, because of that, in order to allow him to do the Aveda, we are makel on him to put it back on. The reason that we're so bothered by this and troubled by doing it is because since it has antibiotics that are spread on this retia, we have a problem of mimareach. Remember that Mimareach is one of the Avodas, one of the Melachas. It's the end of the Avoda on Or, usually, which you smooth it out. And that's exactly what we do with these type of gels that are used for putting on a ritia. So here he obviously doesn't intend to do that. He's just putting it back on where it was already there. But nonetheless, we aser, if it wouldn't be for the special case of the Beis HaMikdash, where Mamater Sofo Mipnei Trilato, we wouldn't allow him to do it. And therefore, in the Medina, we can't do it because we don't have, obviously, the special need for doing the Aveda in the Beis HaMikdash. And if he never had it on him in the first place, it's Bitchila. Now he's coming for the first time to put on this Ritiya. So then that he's not doing for the Aveda, that he's doing for himself because he wants to have a proper bandage. And that we're not Mater anywhere. We're not Mater, not in the Beis HaMikdash, and not in the Medina. Tana Rabbana. Ritiya shepirsha me'algabe makah, machzirim b'shabbat. So here it says, if this bandage fell off, then you're allowed to put it back on Shabbos. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you can't. But if it just slipped a little bit, so let's say it was like on the top of your finger and it slipped down a bit, you could push it back up, dokolamala. If it slipped up, you'd be able to slip it back down again. And not only that, but if you need to actually dry off the wound or clean it off, so you could actually slip it off on purpose a little bit higher, and then you take the bottom part and you clean it a little bit lower, and then you take the top part and you clean it. You'd even be allowed to do that. And you wipe off the maka, but don't wipe the bandage. Because if you wipe the bandage, that's our main problem, because you're doing maricha. And if you actually would have done maricha, really, you'd be chayev achatas. Omer Rav Yehuda Shmuel, halachah Rav Yehuda, that you cannot put it back on, and it's aser. Omer Rav Chista, but when were they arguing? They were only arguing if it fell onto something like a pillowcase or a plate or something. But if it fell onto the ground, nobody held that it was mutter, because that's the equivalent of doing it from the beginning. And from the beginning, for sure, we asked it. Others say just the opposite. Omar Marbar Ravashi, I was once standing right there in front of my father, Ravashi, and a ritiya fell off from him, and it fell onto his pillow, and he put it back on. So I said to him, Abba, you don't hold like what Rav Chista said, that the only machlokis that it's mutter is where it falls onto a kli. But if it falls onto the karka, it's aser. And Shmuel said that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore it should, according to that, Rabbi Yehuda is saying it's aser, even if it's on a kli. So he said to me, no, I don't agree, basically, with what? Lo shemieli, kloma lo svirli. I don't agree with what Rabbi Chista learned. I learned that just the opposite. That if it fell onto a kli, even Rabbi Yehuda was matir, and the only machlokas was where it fell onto the floor. And now we have something for our Rebbe. The question is, what if the Rebbe's guitar string broke in the Beis HaMikdash? So is he allowed to fix the string to be able to continue to play? Now, this is a very serious question. I mean, we'd love to see the Rebbe's face so that he can, you know, face the issue face to face.
It raises the issue of vocal cords needing moisture also.
Yes, it does as well. Thank you. So, as Richie will now introduce one Rebbe to another, although it doesn't look like we're getting anywhere. Thank you. The question is, Koshrin Nima B'Migdash. You're allowed to actually tie a string. Tying a string is not a great way to get some sound out of your musical instrument. But since the Rebbe is not going to discuss it with us, we can't really bring it up too much. But the Gemara will. So if the string of your kinor broke, so the question is, you'd be allowed to tie it, but you can't do that in the Medina. So what we're talking about now is actual kshira. Actual kshira is a malacha d'oraisa. So why are we allowed to do it? Very simple. Sorry. The reason that we're allowed to do it is because the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash of the Nevi'im is actually part of the Akravas Karbonas. And therefore, you can do whatever is necessary to do that you need to do for the korbanos. The thing is that you'll say, okay, but this is only makshirei mitzvah. This is not the mitzvah itself. The mitzvah itself would be, if I had to be mechalel Shabbos, to play, but to actually make the musical instrument, is that mutter? Well, remember, we had a machlokas about somebody who needs to do a brit milah on Shabbat. And back in the second Shabbat, we had Rebbe Eliezer de Mila who said, not only do you do the Mila, but all the makshire elements of the Mila. So forget about bringing the knife. That for sure you can do. How about if you have to dig for charcoal to make the steel, to build the fire, to make a knife? You can do all of that. Because any element, no matter how far removed from the actual mitzvah, would be mutter. So according to this, you ought to be allowed to actually, if this is what he holds, you ought to be able to actually make the musical instrument on Shabbos. And the question is, why are we talking over here only about, like, if we have this b'dieved and so on? So we'll see. But certainly, outside, you're not allowed to. And to do it for the first time in b'tchila, for some reason, you're not allowed to. I mean, l'chora, maman avshach. If makshir and mitzvah doch, and you should be allowed to make your kinor in the beginning. Ask the Gemara, what about the steer of the braisev, Raminu? Nimat kinor shenifsika. So if you've got a musical instrument string that tore, you're not allowed to tie it. You have to use a bow. Oh my gosh, that's a mess. A bow on my violin? No kashin. So that's not a problem, because in the Braita we're going according to the Rabbanan, who say that Makshirim are not Deicha. Whereas this is going according to Rebbe Eliezer, who holds that even Makshirim it's for Deicha. So therefore you could do even a Deoraisa. But the Rabbanan, who hold that Makshirim it's for not Deicha, they say, listen, you got a problem. You can only do a Derabbanan in the Beis HaMikdash, so you're going to need to use a bow. And that's the best that you can do. So according to Rebbe Eliezer, all the makshirim mitzvah deichen as a Shabbos, and you could even do a malacha d'oraisa like such kshira. According to Rabbanan, you can't, and therefore you have to do the bow. Ask the Gemara, but this doesn't make sense. If you hold that makshirim mitzvah are dochin, so then why can't you just make a beautiful kinor from the first place? Well, why am I fixing things by tying them and making a bow in them? It's ridiculous. Bring a new string and fix it properly and do it correctly. And even if it's the beginning and you never had it made before, and it's mamash at the araisa of b'makib patish, who cares? Afilu chatchila nami. So something's wrong with this. We must have the wrong explanation. Actually, the machlokas in the Mishnah is the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan about whether a knot and a bow are the same. That's the nafkamina. So the lokasha. Oh, Rabbi Yehuda. So where we said in the Mishnah, it didn't say anything about making a bow. It said you can just tie it. That's going aliba to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds, what's the difference? If you tie it or you make a bow, it's all the same. So you might as well do it right. And the one in the braisa says going aliba to Rabbanan, who hold it only a normal kshira is usher. And since over here it's possible to not have to tie a knot, so then the best thing to do would be not to be over on kosher. So, I don't understand now. One second. What do you mean it's Rebuta? But it's Rebuta according to which shita? That you are allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos for Makshirei Mitzvah or not? I mean, it's got to be. I mean, otherwise, why is he allowing you to do either? So, is Rebuta going according to who over here? He's got to be going according to Rebbe Eliezer, right? Because he's saying you're allowed to make this knot, and you're allowed to make a bow, but if it's going, I'll leave it to Rebbe Eliezer. What's the problem? Why does it say you can't do it l'chatchila? Why does it say only if it broke on Shabbos? And if it didn't, I didn't have a kinor, why can't I go ahead and do it myself properly? Why can't I put in the string properly? Why are we talking about this? This doesn't make sense either. Oy vavoy. Okay, so there's got to be another solution. Actually, the question over here is the machlokas between Rebbe Shimon, which is the Braisa, and the Mishnah, which is going to leave it to Rabbanan, in the Braisa that follows, the Tanya. Ben Levi, shenivzikalo nimo bikinor. So here you've got this Levi, he's going up there to play music, and all of a sudden he sees, oh my God, my string broke. So what does he do? He ties it. Rabbi Shimon says, no, don't tie it, make a bow. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, make a bow, for God's sake, tie the string. That is supposed to be a way to make music? Afina Mashmata Takol. I mean, what are we talking about over here? A kindergarten orchestra? That's not going to give you what it is that you need. Ella, what to do is remember that you've got additional string, right? That you can twist out from the bottom peg or from the top peg, wherever you've got more string. Twist out, release the string, reconnect it to the top or bottom, as the case may be. So either Mishalsha Milamata Vakar Milamala, take out some string from the bottom, and now attach it to the top and wind it to the correct tone, or vice versa. Mishalsha Milamala Vakar Milamata. So what that would mean is that, according to the Rabbanan, that you're allowed to do it. And here we're introducing a new idea, namely that if the string broke, mashma, that this was something that you couldn't have done before. What's that? So that means that we have here a new shita. This is a shita that agrees with Rebbe Eliezer theoretically, that if it's something that you need to do for makshiri mitzvah is mutter. But they disagree with Rebbe Eliezer because they hold only makshiri mitzvah that couldn't have been done before. But if it could have been done before, and now you're saying the guy walks into the Beis HaMikdash and he needs a string, that he cannot do. So this is a shita we never saw before, and that would explain why we don't say lechatchila in the Mishnah. Why did we say in the Mishnah, only if it broke, but milachatchila lo? That's because it's going according to this new shita, and they say any makshirei mitzvah that could be done before Shabbos need to be done before Shabbos. Okay, and now, as Rashi points out, obviously we could have said this before when we were asking. It doesn't make sense. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Eliezer, why isn't he matir? We could have said that maybe Rabbi Yehuda agrees partially with Rabbi Eliezer, but he holds that there's makshiri mitzvah that could have been done before is not. But we don't know that there is such a thing. In other words, we have no reason to say that's what Rabbi Yehuda holds, so we'd rather find a sheet that holds that, and we found it in the Braita. If you want to, you can make it work out that both of them are going on Libra Rabbonan, and we could say that it depends where the string broke. So if the string breaks in the middle, then there's no way that you can get the correct kind of music out of it by fixing it, not by doing a malacha. And in the Braisa, we're talking about where it just tore at the end, all the way where it's wrapped around the pegs, and that would be okay just to do with the simplest thing. You could do it with a bow, or you could say both are referring to Be'emtza, and the difference would be the question of whether Gazrina, we're worried that we don't want you to use a regular knot, even though it's mutter, because we're afraid that you may do that at the end where it's at the peg where it isn't mutter. Umar Savar, lo Gazrinan.